everybody. I am super pleased to have Tech Sergeant Jacob Frederick here with us on the Forever Wingman podcast. And he's here to talk to us about the 3 Echo 3X1 AFSC, which is the Structures AFSC. So, Jacob, welcome to the Forever Wingman podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you've been. Absolutely, absolutely. So before we jump in, man, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of where you're from and why you decided to enlist in the Air Force?
Yeah, so like you said, I'm Jacob Frederick. I've been in the Air Force for about 14 years now. I originally come from Milton, Wisconsin, which is like a real small farming town up near like Janesville, Madison area in Wisconsin. Before joining the Air Force, I did the normal route of high school, then went to college. I didn't get it accepted into one of the big universities, so I went to a trade school, did a semester there, and realized that, you know, I didn't like high school, didn't like college. So started doing construction on the outside, and the construction company that I was working for ended up going under.
Mm.
And this was back in 2009, 2010 timeframe. So I was out of work, freshly out of high school, no college plans, and didn't really know where my life was going. I was watching a lot of my friends around me make a bunch of dumb decisions.
Yeah.
And I really didn't want to continue down the path that I saw my life going if I stayed that route.
Yeah. Yeah. So why the Air Force and not one of the other services?
Originally in high school, I talked to a Marine recruiter, and after talking to the Marine recruiter, I was getting phone calls probably every other week from a Marine recruiter saying, "Hey, when were you at? Are you still interested?" And that kind of turned me off of that branch. And once I had dropped out of college and, you know, my work plateaued, I was like, let me try the Army. But my uncle, who was a United States Air Force Reserve pilot, was like, why don't you go talk to an Air Force recruiter first?
Yeah.
See what they have to offer. And if that's something that's interesting you, go for the Air Force. Otherwise, feel free to go with the Army. So I took his advice and went in and talked to the Air Force recruiter. He was a little bit hard to get a hold of. So like I went to his door and he had out of office sign on there with his phone number. And I called him. He didn't pick up. He called me back probably a week later. And I think that wanting him, not really needing me more wanting him, kind of definitely enticed me more towards the Air Force versus, you know, my experience with the Marines where they were hounding to get someone. So that really initially drew me into the Air Force, and then sitting down and talking with them, hearing about, you know, the benefits and kind of the way of life with the Air Force really sealed the deal for me.
Nice. And so can you elaborate a little bit more on the way of life that kind of enticed you to enlist in the Air Force?
Just talking to that recruiter specifically, he was saying how, you know, the Army, their primary mission set is their people. The Marines, their weapon is their people versus the Air Force, which is our aircraft. So a lot of time, we're more pulled back from the front lines versus being right on there. So a lot of our temporary duties and deployments are going to be a little bit further back in nicer conditions. And I was like, that sounds nice.
Sign me up. Where do I sign? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Without a doubt. So that's obviously one of the things the Air Force is known for, right? Is the quality of life. The Air Force invests a lot of money into a quality of life programs and stuff like that for its airmen and stuff. So whenever you got done talking to the recruiter, you decided the Air Force for you. What was the job selection process like for you? Were you guaranteed the Structures AFSC, or did you go an open general? What was your story behind that?
So initially, I didn't pick Structures as the career field I want to come in under. I went down to MEPS, the Military Entrance Processing Station, thinking that, hey, you know, I'm going to do explosive ordnance disposal, and that's the only job I have to list.
Yeah.
I got down to MEPS, and they're like, no, you need to list 10 jobs you want to do in the Air Force. So I end up listing all 10. I don't even think structures was on that list originally. It was like explosive ordnance disposal, aerial gunner, all these, you know, cool sounding jobs. And I ended up coming in as EOD, and going through their technical training where, I realized that that wasn't the career field for me.
Yeah.
And I didn't complete their technical training. At that point, I was able to pick 10 other career fields that I wanted to do in the Air Force. My number one choice was HVAC, and then number two was structures. So, okay. I ended up getting, you know, my number two choice and going to that technical training about 3 months into EOD school.
Nice. Outstanding. So you initially signed up as EOD, and then you got reclassed into another AFSC. So is the job selection process pretty much the same? If for whatever reason, someone may have, they didn't make it through tech school for whatever reason, there's some very hard tracks out there, traffic control, special warfare, EOD, things like that. If for whatever reason they failed, is the process very similar to as if you're in the delayed enlistment program waiting on your jobs?
Yeah, it's very similar. They're going to have you create your preference sheet the same way, you know, a recruiter would have you create it before going into the Air Force. So you just build 10 jobs that you want to do, and they're going to try and match you with one of those 10.
Yeah.
I think prioritization kind of goes more towards the people that are in the pipeline already in techno school. So they're trying to line those people up with jobs first. So that way we're making sure to get them career fields and everything.
Gotcha. So I think we talked a little bit about this whenever we first met, on kind of how the Air Force kind of divvies out the jobs, that I guess assume that it would be those in the pipelines that are already graduated from basic training and may or may not have made it through, like in your case, through tech school. Do those, so they get the first kind of the first stab at the Air Force jobs, and then it's getting, and then it's down to the recruiter stations or to basic training, and then it's to the recruiter stations. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Hey, let's take a quick break. If you are all about the Air Force, then be sure to check out the newly launched Forever Wingman YouTube channel, where we have all of these podcasts, but with our beautiful faces. Also, if you are researching the Air Force career fields, then be sure to check out foreverwingman.com. There you'll find the most comprehensive data on all of the AFSCs on the entire interwebs. I'm not flexing at all. Lastly, if you are in the Air Force and or have recently separated and want to share your story to help the next generation airmen, then reach out to me at foreverwingman.com/interview. That's foreverwingman.com/interview. Okay, back to the show. So backing up before the tech school, tell us a little bit about your basic training experience. How prepared were you? Did your world get turned upside down? How many times did you have to drop your bag and pick it back up?
So before I left for basic, like my timeline of joining the Air Force was very quick. I went in and talked to the recruiter, and from the first time I met him to the time I shipped out to basic training, I swear it was only about a month. So it was during a time where a lot of people experienced long amount of times in the delayed entry program.
Yeah.
But because of the career field that I was going into and the high demand, I was able to get in and out of the door very quickly. And so I was not prepared for basic training. I didn't really know what to expect, or I didn't attend any of the delayed entry program DEP calls. So I had never learned facing movements. My high school didn't have a junior ROTC program. So I was completely unfamiliar with, what the Air Force was about, or, you know, even the simplest things of like rank structure or anything. So when I got to basic training and had to give a reporting statement, that was the first time I ever said those words, which was a learning curve. But
tongue twister. Like,
oh, for sure. For sure. I don't know how many times I said, like, sir, trainee so doesn't, and then push-ups. So I definitely learned a lot in that 8.5 weeks that I could have been more prepared for if I had a little bit more time in that program. But I don't feel like I was at a disadvantage at all being down there. And then the 8.5 weeks, it was definitely a shock. I'd say, especially that first week of, you know, you get off the bus and there's MTIs waiting for you, just yelling at you, hurry up, pick up your bags, let's go, let's move, let's do this, was something that I was very unfamiliar with.
Yeah.
So it took me a little bit of time to get used to that. And I'd say by week two, all the yelling and the hurry up, wait kind of gets normalized. So by the end of second week into third week, you're kind of acclimated to the high speed nature of everything. And then by about week four, you're starting to build like relationships with the members in your flight. And you gotta understand, you're surrounded by people that are all away from their home, away from their family. So it's really easy to make those connections and everything and build some good friendships there. And plus my military training instructors were, pretty funny. Like they were both very, very funny people. So even though you couldn't laugh, you could definitely appreciate the humor in what they were doing.
So it sounds like, that pretty much I'm of the thought, and I've said it in other episodes, that, I think that almost anyone can make it through basic training. It's kind of designed, to bring someone straight off the streets, not just like you had. You had no idea about the rank structures, just like me. I had no idea what the ranks. I didn't even know what a rank was. I didn't know the difference between an officer and enlisted was. Take you right off the streets and kind of just throw you to the fire. But it's not all like in your face type training the entire time. And I think I kind of want to foot stomp on that. And I don't want to harp on basic training too much, only because it's, you know, 8.5 weeks of, you know, a 4 to 6 year career and such a small snapshot in time. But as you progress through, right, then you start getting acclimated, you start learning the rules, you start learning the ins and outs of everything that you need to do. And then it just becomes autopilot at that point by, I'm sure, you know, week six, week seven. So just jumping right into tech school. So you initially went off to EOD. And then you went over to the structures AFSC. So maybe you can walk us through the structures AFSC kind of, or the tech school for the structures AFSC. What was tech school like? What is it that you're learning? Can you kind of walk us through the different blocks of training?
Definitely. So structure school is really broken up into two different segments. One where you're focused on carpentry, masonry, things like that. And that's going to be a combined classroom where you're either paired up with the Army, or the Navy Seabees. So you're going to have a mix of Air Force members and sailors or soldiers, depending on your week of training and how those courses align. And they're going to have you construct a dollhouse where you're putting up walls, you're building floors, you're hanging drywall, you're putting together CMU, concrete masonry units, building corner leads, really establishing those fundamental skills to be a carpenter or a mason. And then once you complete that portion of training, they'll transition you into the second block where it's sheet metal, welding, metal fab, those types of those types of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is.
Trades, the trades. Skills.
Yeah, those trades. So the second block of training is all Air Force, or at least it was when I went through Tango school. And it's because the Army, their engineers don't get medals training, and the Navy's medals training is different than the Air Force's. So we split up by service at that point.
Oh, interesting. So why is the Navy medals different than the Air Force? Is it just the aircraft versus the maritime vessels?
No, I think they get more specialized as far as pipe welding, and their career fields break it down a little bit further, whereas ours is more all-encompassing. So we want, you know, one person to be able to do MIG welding, TIG welding, stick welding, sheet metal work, carpentry, masonry. So we're trying to build, you know, that whole structures troop up to be able to do all those things, whereas theirs is going to be a little bit more refined.
Gotcha. Now, do you actually learn all those different types of welding? Do you actually do it?
Yes, sir.
That's pretty cool.
We do. Yep. You'll have opportunities in tech school to do MIG welding and stick welding, as well as oxyacetylene torch welding. And then if you come back for the additional welding course, they'll get you to do TIG welding as well.
Gotcha. So for a structures troop, once you graduate tech school, what does the typical day look like? What would you be doing?
It really depends on the base and your mission set. So civil engineer squadrons are broken up into two different categories, either Prime Beef or Red Horse. Prime Beef is going to be more of the base maintenance career, base maintenance mission, whereas Red Horse is expeditionary, setting up, hangars or clamshells, large tents, doing a lot of concrete work. But if you're on the Prime Beef side, which is where my 14-year career has, stayed the entire time, you can expect to be going out to different facilities around base and performing maintenance on those facilities, as well as doing, the occasional new construction project.
Yeah.
It's a really cool career field in the sense that you have the opportunity to do something different every day of the week. It's never going to be the same or monotonous in that sense. Just because a Prime Beef squadron's structure shop is going to more than likely be broken up into three different sections, where you have your metals shop, and then your carpenter shop, and your locksmithing shop. So as a new airman coming into the career field, they're going to try and put you into each and every one of those shops, so you get the experience and are able to go out to a deployed environment and perform, whatever they're asking for at that time. So typically, your day, you get into work, it's about an 8-hour day, and depending on where you're at kind of determines the schedule that you're going to be on. When I was out in California, we'd show up to work at 7:30 in the morning, get out at 4:30 every day. And then Monday, Wednesday, Friday have PT for 45 minutes, and then 45 minutes for hygiene, go home, shower, do whatever, come back and start your day at that point.
So is that schedule, is that pretty typical for most of the structures offices?
The ones that I've been a part of, it's pretty standard as far as an 8-hour work day.
Got it. So this AFSC isn't necessarily shift work in nature, unless obviously there's, you have the asterisk that mission dependent. And if you're deployed, then everyone's 24 hours, right? But on a typical base, on your normal Monday through Friday, it's not shift work.
Correct.
That's great.
In Garrison Mission, you're Monday through Friday, 40 hours a week, typically.
Nice. So you mentioned locksmithing. Is that something that you learn in tech school as well?
So they don't touch on it too much in technical school, just because each base has their own lock systems and everything. So you get more of that hands-on training once you get to your first location and working in the locksmith. But they do have opportunities to go to the Lock Master Security Institute, which is located in Kentucky, where the military will pay for you to go out there and get a certification to be a locksmith or to work on GSA safes, GSA vaults.
That's pretty cool. So so it sounds like you're absolutely right. The CAFSC has a lot. It's very dynamic, whether it be carpentry, masonry, metals, locksmithing. Basically, it sounds like anything to deal with a building or a facility of sorts, you guys put your hands on.
Definitely. Anything vertical on the facility, we're going to be a part of. Outside, so civil engineering squadrons, they're comprised of 9 different career fields. And we work hand in hand together with the electricians, with the plumbers, with the HVAC to get all those systems up and running. So our HVAC technicians, they will get the HVAC units up. We build the sheet metal ducts for them, get those systems installed, and provide air to the facilities.
That's pretty cool. So would you say, in your opinion, this AFSC is a pretty large AFSC or pretty small AFSC? So if someone threw it on their jobs list when they're creating it, obviously Security Forces is one of the largest AFSCs out there, right? And they're kind of in high demand right now. So if you put that on your list, the chances of you getting it are probably pretty high. So if someone put structures of the AFSC and they're like, it's like, all I want to do is structures, right? I want to learn how to weld. Is that something that they're highly likely to do, or less likely, like say like public affairs, where it's a really small career field and the chances of getting is pretty small?
So I would say it's larger than public affairs, much smaller than security forces.
Good answer.
it's going to fall somewhere in the middle there. It's not the biggest career field. The civil engineer squadron is going to be one of the larger squadrons on base, aside from, you know, security forces and our aircraft maintenance squadrons. Then typically, the civil engineer squadron falls right under there, so that there are a lot of career opportunities coming in for this position. But because of the qualifications to get into the civil engineer squadron being available to a larger audience of people, makes it a little bit tougher to get one of these jobs. Speaking from the recruiter standpoint, where I'm at now.
Yeah, absolutely. So probably quick disclaimer, right? So you are a recruiter out in Marietta, Georgia, and you cover the northwest portion of Georgia. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Going from Noonan, Georgia, out to Alabama, pretty much.
Gotcha. And you've been a recruiter for probably about, you said, 3 years, right? Almost 3 years?
Yeah, three years now.
Nice, outstanding. So on the AFSC, when someone comes in, they get to their new base, they're kind of digging in, they're learning on-the-job stuff, probably making the circulation to the different shops just to get a familiarization. What does the upgrade training look like for an airman who may be studying for their 5 level? What does that process look like?
So the process has changed since I've become a recruiter. When I went through upgrade training, it was 15 months of upgrade training with 10 CDCs.
Oh, wow.
I believe they've reduced that number significantly now. I want to say it's around 6, but I do not know that answer for sure, because I've been out of the career field for a few years now.
Yeah.
So I believe it's around 6, but you can expect that there's going to be some hands-on training to tie into what you're learning in your CDC. So if you're in the carpenter section of your CDCs, your supervision is going to try and put you in different jobs that are going to get you exposure to use those skills. So that way you're not just learning out of a book. You're also applying those skills every day and can retain that information better that way.
Gotcha. So if someone actually got selected for this job and they're about to ship off to basic training, or they got it in basic training, what would you say would make them most successful in coming into the AFSC? Are there any kind of misconceptions or misunderstandings of your career field that you've kind of seen newer airmen coming in, or other airmen and other AFSCs kind of on the outside looking in? Are there any kind of misconceptions? What would set someone up for success in this AFSC?
I really think the biggest thing that would set them up for success is just the willingness to learn new things, as well as the motivation to learn them and to do things efficiently. Because construction as a whole, the more efficient you are, the more money you're going to make, whether it's in the Air Force or outside of the Air Force. So the more efficient you are, the better you're going to do at the job. But you get that through training and learning your career field. So the more knowledgeable you are, the more efficient you are. So really just trying to gather up all the information that's out there and is available to you, and having the internal drive to get better every single day.
Yeah.
and learn more about your trade is going to make you extremely successful in this career field.
Yeah, that's great. And it's actually awesome advice probably for all of the AFSCs, for any new airman coming in, right, is to be teachable, to learn your job, right, to learn your skill and practice it, get better at it every single day. And that's through, even though the Air Force has a very structured way of walking you through that, right, through the upgrade training and everything, and just OJT in general. But that's the Air Force's structure of doing it, that it's probably behooves any new airman coming in to the Air Force to be teachable, to learn new things, to even experience. So as they go through the different shops, is talk to other people from other career fields and stuff, kind of learn how they do things, and just be a sponge, absorb it, right?
Definitely. And having a little bit of humility where you can be humble and be like, hey, I'm not the smartest person at masonry. Let me try and learn off someone that is, because especially in the structures career field, there might be someone that's only been there for a year but has more experience than you doing this one specific task. So being humble enough to reach out to that person and try and learn from, you know, the experience that they have versus what you've experienced.
Yeah. Yeah. So on the assignments, let's touch on it real quick. I civil engineering is lit every single installation. So I assume that the assignments for this career field are pretty dense. You can pretty much go anywhere to any of the Air Force bases, right?
There are a few exceptions. There are certain bases that have civilian contractors that perform the base maintenance and everything. So certain spots you won't have opportunities, but there are so many different bases that you can go to. The few that you can't definitely outweigh, you know, the ones that you can go to.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, or vice versa. I don't know if that came out the right way.
the overall gist is there's a lot of assignments, very few exceptions.
Correct.
Yeah. Awesome. So what about I think in the Air Force, some of the jobs, the AFSCs, are a little bit more mysterious on how they translate into skills on the outside of the Air Force. I think the structures AFSC is pretty much black and white on how that can translate into skills on the outside. What kind of jobs do you see your peers that may have gotten out, or your leadership that may have gotten out? What do you see them? What kind of jobs do you see them moving into?
It's pretty diverse career fields I've seen people get out and get into. The one I see very often is people will retire from the structures career field and then come back and work for the Air Force or Department of Defense doing the same exact job as a civilian.
It happens
all the time. They've learned this lifestyle and this skill set, so that's all they want to do for the rest of their lives. But you're not completely limited to just doing that. I've had friends get out, and one of my friends, he was just the shop safety monitor. He got his OSHA 30-hour course.
Yeah.
And then when he got out, he was a construction safety monitor for a big construction company. So he went from making $50,000 with the Air Force to instantly $70,000-$80,000 with this private construction company. And it really just depends on how good you are at writing that resume and selling what you've learned in the Air Force, because you are going to get a lot of exposure to different experiences, whether it's locksmithing or even just the supervisory management portion of being a structures troop, as well as like the training aspect of it too. So you could go out and, you know, teach people how to do carpentry, do welding, do sheet metal, that type of stuff.
Yeah. I think those auxiliary skill sets, I think they're so underrated with, people in the Air Force who are coming out, right? It's those additional duties that are assigned that they're kind of disgruntled in getting them initially, but that additional duty could very well lead to a career on the outside. That's why I'm a firm believer of just trying to, you know, say yes, before you say no, especially to those kind of things, because it makes you so much more marketable, on the outside, speaking from experience. Within the command and control career field, holding the top secret clearance, you have like your security manager, you're in, what used to be JPASS, now DIS, that you interact with that as an additional duty quite often. But there's so many people from our career field that have ventured out into the personal security career field as civilians or as contractors. So they're not even doing their primary job. They're doing what that small little additional duty gave them, that skill set. So I assume that this is probably a lot like that.
Definitely. One of my coworkers that retired from structures, he was able to use the GI Bill to go to that Lockmaster Security Institute and do the same exact certifications that I was able to get through our career field. He was able to go to that same Lockmaster's course that I went through and get the same certifications. And now he has started his own locksmithing company as a civilian.
Gotcha. I get excited about your career field and why I think some people should consider it, especially if they're interested in the trades, is that your AFSC, the structures AFSC, is very dynamic in what it is that you can learn, right? There's people who built entire businesses, like you mentioned, your friend on the locksmithing, who built businesses off of just one trade that you're going to learn. So you could build an entire business off of the masonry side or the metal side, or even the welding. So all these trades are highly, highly marketable on the outside. In fact, they'd probably say that there's a shortage of them, especially electricians and plumbers and stuff like that, to get out there and do it. That everyone thinks they have to go to college to go to have a successful career on the outside, when not necessarily. You just have to learn a trade and then start making it rain whenever they start their business.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, Tech Sergeant Frederick, I appreciate it. And we're kind of reaching the end of our discussion. But what I always want to do when I'm talking to everybody is just ask what it is that you would tell like your little brother, your cousin, your nephew, whoever that came to you and said, hey, I'm thinking about enlisting in the Air Force. What words of advice would you give them?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd say be open-minded to opportunities that the recruiter is going to offer you, because the Air Force, once you get in, there are so many different avenues you can go down. And I see it as a recruiter, I see it happen all the time where people are hesitant to take that entry level position. They're holding out for this job or another. And, then something happens in their life and they're no longer qualified to join the Air Force, which, you know, it's a terrible thing. So whenever they come in to talk to a recruiter, I'd say listen to what they're telling you and believe them, because they're trying to get you into the Air Force and give you the opportunity to change your life, really. So take their advice. Of course, you want to do your own research and make sure that everything they're telling you is authentic, but listen to them and really set yourself up for success, because when you come into the Air Force, you'll have the opportunity to cross train or do a special duty like I'm doing now, where you can step outside of your career field and gain some more career experience.
Yeah.
So really getting your foot in that door is the biggest step that you'll have to overcome.
Yeah, it's great advice. And I've said it before, and I'll continue to say it again, that the Air Force has given me almost everything I have now. It's either directly given it to me or indirectly through benefits or whatever the case may be. You know, the jobs on the outside working with FEMA and jobs with the Army working as a civilian, even now with Forever Wingman, right? That everything that I have, even my spouse, I met my spouse while I was on deployment down to Savannah, Georgia. So it's everything, right? I'm so grateful for everything the Air Force has given me. And I absolutely 110% agree with you that you should be open. Don't get so hard-headed on just one AFSC thinking that it's that or nothing. Unless that's your priority and your goal, then so be it. Check out the other services as well, if that's what your goal is. But just getting into the Air Force and everything that it gives you, whether it be through training, through mentorship, through discipline. I was a very, very undisciplined young man when I enlisted in the Air Force, and the Air Force very quickly disciplined me. But it's more of like, I thought I was too stupid to even go to college. So I enlisted in the Air Force, and now I'm doing, you know, nuclear command and control. So as an 18-year-old kid, so I'm going for almost failing high school to 6 months later, you know, learning all about nuclear weapons and how, you know, the United States does nuclear war. So you get matured very, very quickly, right? It's not just, you know, finger in face kind of maturing or anything. It's literally the responsibility that the Air Force gives you is massive, on top of all the benefits, and everything else that comes along with just serving. Sergeant Frederick, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate you talking to us about the structures AFSC. And I wish you all the best.
You too. Thank you.